Thank you. And I'll open it up for comments if anyone else wants to comment.
Oh, careful, John, you might need to unmute some people.
John, it's Chuck. I'd just like to point out that, you know, my experience in business, leadership really matters, really makes a difference. It provides the vision of the mission and keeps people focused. And you led through a very interesting period of time, including COVID, which was very challenging. And through the transition that John just mentioned, we've gone through for the CEO role, you've really been exemplified leadership to me in its fullest extent. So thank you.
And thank you, Chuck. And the other thing I want to identify as a terrific success on Kevin's part is his strong leadership and role in making sure that the Watsonville facility went forward and is there and kids are being educated. Kevin, thank you very much for that too. That was a terrific multi-role performance you made there. And then finally, what I want to tell as a board chair to any CEO is thank you for not bringing all the things you didn't bring to us and that you took care of yourself. There are always those things where I'm glad we didn't have to go to the board. And on the other side of the fence, on behalf of the board, thank you very much for making sure that those things didn't come forward.
Thank you all for those very kind words, for this very lovely gift. I will cherish it just like I cherish my 7 years working with the team and the board and making a difference for Navigator Schools. It was definitely a highlight in my career that I'll never forget. And it really helped prepare me to be a better teacher, which my students in East Palo Alto are benefiting from. So it's been a great, great time supporting Caprice also in the transition. And I'm happy to do whatever I can to support Navigator going forward. And again, it was really an honor and a privilege in serving Navigator. And I really wish the organization the best in continuing to improve, which I know is really firmly in our DNA.
Thanks, Kevin. Don't go far. We'll call on you again before the year's out and next year. So well, thanks so much.
And I can tell you, I call on him regularly and have been completely blessed to have him as a partner in this transition. Kevin, I've called you a friend since at least 1999 and continue to do that for another 25 years.
I feel the same way. Thank you, Caprice.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, thank you all for making the time tonight. I really appreciate it and look forward to seeing you all again soon, hopefully.
Kevin, see us. Two other items in my remarks. I just want to take a moment to welcome our emergency aid back from Hawaii and from the last disaster. It's always good to see you. Thanks for being back.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for your work. The third thing is I'd like to thank the board for making an effort to join this meeting tonight and to attend this and to go forward. The last thing I'll report is that I had a meeting with Caprice and Nina, where we discussed fundraising in significant detail, and there'll be more coming on that in the near future for board members. So look forward to that. Those are the end of my remarks. Does anyone have any questions for me? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item E, the report from the CEO and superintendent.
Thanks. I just like, Sean, if you could put the picture on. It has been an eventful month. it's also right now we've just kicked off Hispanic Heritage Month, and already the schools are having some phenomenal parties and adventures and celebrations. You just here at Gilroy, it was just jammed. Not that one, the Watsonville one that I sent you before. It's coming. So that's going brilliantly, but I wanted to acknowledge, and if we don't have the picture, that's not a crisis, but it's a fun picture if you got it. Do you need me to send it to you again? Or
just explain it to you.
All right, I'm going to vamp while you're doing that. Our Watsonville school is made up of total heroes and heroines. I have to tell you, because now, honestly, I have 100% confidence that if the other three schools had been hit with the same kinds of things that Watsonville was, that they would be absolutely able to handle it too. But Watsonville had already a day where the power was off in the whole school. And when the power is off, you're not able to have the carbon monoxide monitors on. And so there, shout out to Watsonville Prep. So they had a day where they had 450 kids in the CVS parking lot because they couldn't be inside the school. And the staff rallied and handled it brilliantly. And not even a week later, a truck hit the fire hydrant next to the school and the water was out. And there was a huge geyser next to the school. And yet again, we had 450 kids in the CVS parking lot. And the staff just was phenomenal. They were flexible. They were responsible. They made good on making sure that all of the kids either got home safely or continued to be educated during the day. And one of the really wonderful things that happened also was that the Watsonville Prep leadership team reached out to the local elementary school, which is two blocks away, and said, help, help. We have all of our kids in the CVS parking lot. And the local school principal, instead of saying, oh, you're a charter school, we don't care about you, they said, send them over. And so it was also a great example of partnership. And so the picture you see here is Andy, our principal, at Watsonville Prep. And for my remarks to Dave, I just have two items. This one, and just to say congratulations to Watsonville Prep for your amazing, amazing resilience and flexibility. Kirsten is giving us the snaps. So let's a celebration for Watsonville Prep. And I was in classrooms just this morning, and everybody was on task and focused and engaged and as if nothing had happened. Maybe even just kind of nice because they had a little adventure. And then second, I would like to echo our board chair's welcoming of Noelle Russell Unterberger, our new chief finance and operations officer. And so welcome, Noelle. She joins us from being the CFO for an organization called Baby to Baby, which is a huge organization that raises money and cash and car chairs and clothing and diapers for babies, where she was their CFO. And prior to that was the CFO for an international aid organization called CORE, and is the previous CFO for the Greater Los Angeles YWCA. But she's also the mother of charter school graduates and has served as the board chair for charter school. Yeah. So welcome, Noelle.
So I get to have full circle back in the charter school world. So I'm super excited about that.
Terrific.
Yes.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you for Caprice for thinking of me and taking this journey together to make Navigator grow and do more awesome things.
Yay.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me.
Great, thanks, Doctor. We'll move to item F, the approval of the minutes for August 29th, 2023. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the August 29th meeting?
JP, so moved.
Thank you, JP. Do I hear a second?
Jaime, second.
Thank you, Jaime. Any changes or amendments to the minutes? Hearing none, would you, Sean, would you call the roll to approve the minutes, please?
Alfred Morkang.
I will abstain.
Chuck Deggs.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Emma Kuroga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shara Hegde.
Aye.
Clay Grissom.
Aye.
Motion is approved.
Great, thank you. Welcome, Claire. Moving on to the consent agenda. There are seven items on the consent agenda that we will vote on that have been listed in the agenda. I'll make a note to object to item six, and with my objection, we'll pull item six off the consent agenda. With the discussion,
it will be back next month.
It will be back next month.
We have a little bit of negotiation to go. The price won't change, but the terms definitely will.
So more on that in the October meeting. Any questions about the state of negotiations and what we're doing there? Give Dr. Young a call. The others are consent agenda items. Do I hear any other objections on the consent items or any questions for the superintendent or staff on the consent items?
Yes, I have one question on number three. The NSSC directors. Can you tell me a little bit more about this organization?
The Navigator School Support Corporation is an organization that was created as a partner organization, and it's specifically as a 501c3 that is a support organization for Navigator. It is designed to help raise money for the Navigator Public Schools, and it is also has a captive organization called 407 Maine, which is a wholly owned nonprofit subsidiary of it that owns our Watsonville school and leases the Watsonville school to Navigator. I know that sounds complex, but it's done for a specific reason. It was done in order to remove the liability so that if anything were to happen at that school, it would accrue only to Watsonville as opposed to the other three schools. And then also to structure the lease so that we would be eligible to use SB 740 dollars to pay for that lease. So it's a little complex, but there are three members of that board. Two of them have been on since the beginning, and Katrin, who is now the head of Silicon Schools, had to resign because of a potential conflict of interest. And so in doing this, you are reappointing the original two and adding Kevin Sved as our emeritus CEO to join that board and support the Watsonville School.
Okay, thank you.
One of the things in addition to the Watsonville piece that we'll do is we will bring that organization and use it as an opportunity to appoint folks that want to be involved in Navigator, may or may not want to be on the board, but can still provide us with fundraising power. So more on that, more on this organization and its strategic role in the overall Navigator scheme at our strategy session. So coming.
Yeah, that'd be great to learn a little bit more about it. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, would you call the roll to approve the consent agenda as the six items on the consent agenda? Sean.
Did we have a motion?
Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
That was Chuck.
Sorry, it was Chuck.
Second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, would you call a roll for Chuck?
Alfred Borking?
Aye.
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
Imai Karuga?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Sarah Hegde?
Aye.
Eric Grissom?
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Thank you. Moving to item three, the Academic Success Committee. Claire, thank you for joining us. Hope your fairgrounds meeting went well. And do you have a report for us with respect to academic success?
And James is available here also to do a pared down version of the presentation at your discretion, Claire.
Yeah, and I appreciate the board giving me the grace to be on Zoom tonight. And James, if you could chime in, that would be wonderful.
Sure, no problem. You want me to just take it from here, Claire?
Yes, please.
Okay, you got it. All right, well, good evening, board. It is great to see all of you. Oops, let me share my screen. And so I will be sharing a fraction of the slides that you had, focusing primarily on the SBAC slides. We'll be hitting the highlights on the other topics. And lastly, feel free to interrupt at any time and ask tough questions. Crystal's here to answer them. And with that, I will launch off. Just kidding, Crystal. This is the team that helped put this presentation together, and it's a very diverse group under the academic department, and I just want to thank all of them. And Crystal is our editor-in-chief, so she's also here to support today. So the headlines for the SBAC, generally speaking, we had small to large gains. Shout out to Hayward Collegiate with their impressive double digits in ELA. And we saw small drops in math at the three southern sites and a small gain from Hayward Collegiate. And I think most on our minds is the subgroup gaps, which you saw in the entirety of the presentation. They range mainly from large to almost none. And so what we're going to really focus on is, as you saw in the title, what we're going to be doing about that, these softer areas in mathematics in particular. So this, again, is just very quickly looking at the overall growth in ELA. Here again, you see an impressive 16-ish points from Hayward Collegiate. So again, great job there. And you'll see now all three of our schools are at, with the exception of Watsonville Prep, are all within about a percentage point or two of the number of kids that are scoring meeting or exceeding the standard in ELA. Math is a little bit of a different story. We're seeing, again, a drop overall of about 3 or 4% at the southern schools. That represents about an average of 2 students per grade level when you look at it that way. And Hayward Collegiate had an improvement of, 4%. And I think some of the reasons that I think that we see this decrease potentially is the implementation of illustrative math for the first time in the southern schools, and Hayward Collegiate last year was in their second year. It's pretty normal to see a drop, I think, statistically at most schools when they implement a new curriculum, and we are doing some pretty significant changes to how we're implementing this at the southern schools this year. So that's coming later in the presentation. As we look through the subgroup average, we again see this big gap with the exception of migrant students, which is a pretty small number of our students in both ELA and math. And so again, we see a large gap in subgroup students and our non-subgroup students across overall. The next slides were just broken down by mathematics, and you'll see that in each case, it's a different subgroup. So this is looking at economically disadvantaged. On the right here, you'll see the percentage of kids that are socioeconomically disadvantaged at each site. And there were several slides, English learners, which I think one important point to point out about English learners that is that Each year, students that are in fourth grade and up go through what's called a redesignation process, where they become what's called redesignated fluent English proficient. And once that student hits that level, they are removed out of the EL category, and they would move into, or they would stay in other categories, but they're no longer here. So it's often that English learners are our lowest performing subgroup to begin with, because of the disadvantage of those first 5 years of not having as much English in the home, and then taking a test in English in third grade. For that reason, and also the students being removed from fourth and up, we often see this as being our lowest performing subgroup. Here's the Hispanic Latino achievement gap in subgroups, and you also see the kind of the percentage of Hispanic and Latino again by student, by school. And then the last one we have here is a student by disabilities. I wanted to point out that 11% of the students in the state, that was a state average for students with disabilities. That includes students with mathematics or language arts disabilities, as well as students that have speech and language disabilities. And so, with the exception of Gilroy, which is very interesting, because I've seen that number over the years as high as 40, it was right at the state average, and our other three schools were almost double the state average for our students with disabilities. So I'm gonna dissolve the screen for a moment to let you guys ask any questions that you have. You have the full slide deck, and this is the only one that I did share very quickly, each of those slides, to see if there were any questions or comments that the board has before we move on to the next topic.
Yeah, James, is there anything that has you really concerned and or just generally concerned?
I would say generally concerned about our students in our lower grades. I believe our middle schools outperformed our elementary schools for the first time, and I think that's because of that group of kids that had come through in their such critical early reading stages, and also foundational math and learning over Zoom. The second thing that has me concerned is the future. If our interventions and our strategies this year are not making a significant impact on them, I'm concerned what to do next, because this strategy has worked in the past. I have a lot of confidence in it, but there's always the fear that what you attempt to do doesn't work as well as you would hope.
Other questions for James or Claire?
Okay. He has a couple more topics.
I do. And I'm happy if the question comes up down the road, super happy to, go back to any of these topics. So topic number two is our academic priorities. And they're essentially improving tier one instruction. And we're focused right now on using in the mathematics classrooms. So our southern schools are returning to math centers. And I'll explain why that's important in a moment. And the second one is our interventions are up and running in record time. Shout out to WPS in particular that had interventions running with over 150 students, and maybe even more than that, every day right after school on day two. It was just awesome effort by that team. When I said I was going to talk about why centers is important, we started doing centers in English language arts in 2014. And when we took the test in 2014-15, we saw this incredible performance of both HPS and GPS. And that year, we did not do centers in mathematics. So you'll see it was 31 instruction, and we were quite a gap here. And then the year we moved to the 10-to-1 ratio, we saw in both 16-17 and 18-19, very high numbers in the high 70s for both, or in the mid 70s for both GPS and HPS all of those years. HPS was always, it seemed somehow like a percentage point ahead of GPS, but that they were very close. And what we did last year in the Southern Heights is we did 30-to-1 math again, because we were implementing this new curriculum. Over the course of the year, we've created this model that I believe will make a huge difference. And in a nutshell, what happens is the kids in this 90-minute block are actually broken down into groups of 10 with two adults in the classroom like we used to do, plus a blended app, which is a software program. They also, in the morning, get a little bit of whole class instruction, which is building towards this teacher center here, and they get spiral and fluency. So kids are getting close to 120 minutes of mathematics this year, which I think is also going to really help fill in those gaps that are left behind from the pandemic, or just students that need extra support. So that is our first priority. Any questions on that one?
Yeah, I'm just curious to have your sort of professional view. How much of the challenge is just the sort of the stubborn difficulty of math, and how much of it is the COVID impact?
Well, I would say 20% of our drop is probably from the COVID time, which is almost all of it, I would say. We did use a new program over the pandemic also that we thought would be more effective over Zoom. We switched out of that one when we came back in person, and now we're adding centers. So I think the combination of those two things have been part of it, John. It's really hard to tell. We're still, I would say, really trying to understand what it is. And when we get to the next few slides, I'll explain how we're trying to address that in intervention, those gaps. So very quickly to explain how we think of academic interventions, this triangle represents what we call multi-tiered system of supports, or MTSS. And it's essentially a way of looking at how do we support students that are being successful or not as successful in both behavioral or emotional or academics. And essentially the green represents everything that we do for all students. It's called tier one instruction. Tier two is when we do a prevention or intervention program that's maybe not as high a ratio, as certainly not what they have in the classroom. So maybe six kids to one adult. It's done after school, before school, lunchtime sometimes, or summer school could be considered tier two also. And then we have this very intensive intervention at the top where we are essentially bringing the ratios down even smaller to three, two, or one student per instructor to try to move them all towards yellow. And we're trying to move our yellow students into the green in both behavior and academics. So when we launched this year, like I said before, it was our fastest launch. I think there was a lot of certainly urgency with our slips in mathematics. And you can see across our network, we have 147 students getting a reading comprehension, which certainly is addressing our English language learners because of the deficiencies in vocabulary more than anything that students have. That comprehension will certainly help in that area. Overall, we've always done a really good job of getting students to read fluently, but again, it's the vocabulary and being able to make sense of what they're reading because of their many of them having English as their second language. And then in math, you can see we have an inordinate number because that's what we need to do right now. Here's the breakdown by school. Hayward Collegiate got their tier threes up and running, which when you saw your slide deck come in, that's where they were last week. They've now added 20 more students in the tier two arena and are continuing to bolster those interventions at that site. So those are our plans. You did see, more comprehensive explanations of the interventions in the slide deck.
He makes it sound so easy, but one of the big things too is just the logistics of all of this.
Yeah,
it is. It's a big puzzle, and I'm just so proud of our teams to get it up and running so quickly. I think most schools are, maybe starting to get it together at this point, but really, really proud of them. It's just more time on task for the kids, and that's what they need. All right. Topic three, I'm happy to report our year-to-date ADA is currently at 95% across our network, which is a 2 or 3% increase, I believe, over where we were last year. And it's really owed to the efforts of the schools. And in particular, we've hired intervention or attendance specialists to improve the average daily attendance. This is getting back towards numbers that we were used to before the pandemic. WPS continues to be the exception to the rule here. I think they're at 92%. The other three schools, I think, are actually, if you round up, to 96%. So that's a big improvement. It's not only going to obviously improve student academics and engagement, but it also helps us financially to get back to like the revenue that helps support these things. So the attendance specialist in a perfect world, and so far as playing out, is going to end up paying for itself by the increased ADA.
What's a realistic goal?
We have historically been between 95 and 96% without a attendance specialist. That was just on, you know, tier one. Adding this is what we have to do, I'm seeing now, just to get back to 95%.
And I can tell you what we budgeted for, because we knew we were hiring the attendance specialist. We budgeted for our pre-pandemic numbers, which for GPS and HPS was 97%. WPS is 95%, and HC was 96%.
So is it generally a 2 to 3 percentage point lift? Is it what's expected as a result of the attendance specialist?
Yeah, I've been saying to them, 97, get me 97. So that's what they're shooting for, is 97%.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
And Jamie, can you identify factors at WPS that are not present in the other three schools that are reasons of dip?
Yeah, I mean, John, the thing that jumps out is the variable that I've been able to detect so far may be quite related to parent education levels. There's a really significant number of parents that did not graduate high school at WPS, and certainly a much lower college going rate. And so I wonder if the community potentially is not valuing education at the same rate, or the same, I guess you could say, level as other communities. And I, you know, being a vice principal in Watsonville, you know, many years ago, it was very similar. It's just that I feel like it's a cultural and community issue of Watsonville. Now, I think the most effort we've put in since 2019 has been in Watsonville, and we're still just eking out numbers that like don't compare. And that is with a tremendous effort. I think what I'd like to do is hopefully by the October meeting, the state dashboards will be out, and we'll have an idea like how are we doing relative to Watsonville? Because I think we'll find some like pretty interesting numbers there, but right now we still can't see the other districts or sites in the state. We just have our individual student scores still.
The other thing is that, Watsonville does have our highest percentage of parents who haven't completed high school and are not college going. And that also impacts how much money they make and how flexible their work hours are too. So just the simple fact of not having a high school diploma or a college education can put significant logistical barriers if, for example, you don't know what your work schedule is going to be, or you have to work weird hours.
Yeah.
And so it's not necessarily just how the parents value education, but also just the plain old logistical challenges.
Yeah. Often also twofers, where the older child stays home to take care of the younger child because the younger child's sick and there's nobody else there, right. Which is a double whammy on the attendance. The reason this is one more reason that this is super important is that the state added, I can't remember when, maybe it was last year or 2 years ago, the chronic absentee is now something that's looked at the state level. And in order for us to receive a presumptive charter renewal at any of our sites, we have to be green or blue in any in all of the areas. Currently, in based on our last year's chronic absenteeism, these will be our scores when it comes out. Sean, I don't know. Do you remember what year it came out initially, or will this be the baseline year?
I think actually this will most likely be the baseline year, simply because it looks like the state board is going to change their policy about what the baseline year is because of COVID.
Okay. Yeah. And if you think about it, I think the average chronic absenteeism last year for the state was over 30%. And so there are going to be more than half the schools, at least probably in the red. Do you know what the cutoff is for red, Sean? Is it 20?
I'm not sure.
It would make sense. And then 15 might be orange. But at any rate, that will hopefully be out next month to look at. And then the last topic was model providing. And we have a lot going on in model providing and very exciting times. So this year, we did not enroll any new folks in our traditional model providing because we received a $250,000 grant from Charter School Growth Fund to essentially bring model providing in to a more effective delivery model. And what that is we're going to be creating courses that schools across the country can participate in. Principals can lead PDs on their site with the videos and supporting materials that we have. And then those folks can then sign up for a paid coaching experience with us to really deepen their implementation if they so choose. And so it'll give a really low price point for organizations that want to just get the basics of what we do at Navigator, and also a more expensive entry point after that, which would be the one-on-one coaching that we have been doing traditionally. I think that's going to increase the number of folks that are using our strategies, and also potentially increase the number of organizations that want to model, you know, to then dive into a deeper partnership. So that's work that is being done and will be launched for next school year in July, starting in July. So a lot of filming, a lot of preparation going on right now for that. The second thing that's also sustaining us this year is a second year of the RTAC grant, which is a $216,000 annual grant that we're in year two of, in which we are doing, I would say, a more prescriptive model providing based on the grant we wrote and received 2 years of funding for. Eight meetings a year with what are called critical friends, and three workshops put on across the state where people can come in person and learn. First one will be this Thursday, actually. So that is also just helping cover our costs this year, and also support with the long-term plan of the Navi Impact. And then lastly, we are continuing to work with one school up in Seattle. Justin and Marlena are up there right now, looking at how they're implementing our middle school squads model. It's our second visit. And the initial reports from everyone that I've talked to, including the principal, is that from 1 year to the next, we've seen a really great impact in how things are running in their middle school. And they're quite excited. So looking forward to sharing maybe a little bit more concrete information down the road with the board. And so with that, is the end of the presentation, and certainly happy to field more questions. And one of the big questions I have is, of these four topics, is there something that the board would like to see us do a deeper dive on next month at the full board level, or of these four topics? We also will be right at the point where we have our end of unit or end of quarter data, which could also be the best thing to do next month if all the data is in by the time that we could do that at the board meeting. But I'll defer to you guys at this point.
Thank you, James. Anyone thoughts, Claire? Do you have thoughts about what we should be doing next in October?
I think looking at the scores as they come up, that would be great. What James had said.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to stay focused where we are and not add anything new at this point in time. Just really stay laser focused on the progress we're making.
Yeah. That's funny, Chuck, that you mentioned that, because we talked for the first time about a freeze on anything new at Navigator. I've never used that word before, but we said it today.
It's easy to get pulled into the new shiny object. But it just diverts it. You're looking at core fundamentals that we really can really move the dial, and let's stay focused on those and see if we can continue to see progress.
Great.
Dave, you said the dashboard will be out by next board meeting?
The state dashboard. Yeah, hoping that the state hasn't necessarily been on time with things.
Yeah. Thank you. Typically, by now, we would have the state embargoed website that we could start looking at. Last year, I think it came out on September 20th or 21st, and still crickets from the state on when we'll actually see that. So I don't know if they're going to keep their timeline for the dashboard or not.
But hopefully.
Yep.
I have a quick comment. You know, when I was looking at all the graphs and the data, I did notice a big difference in Watsonville Prep. I was comparing Watsonville Prep and Hayward Collegiate. You know, Hayward Collegiate and Watsonville Prep, we're pretty similar, I think, in demographics. You know, we both started around 2019, adding a grade level, and I was looking at the amount of minutes that Watsonville Prep and Hayward Collegiate both received last year. And that was according to the 22-23 calendar, which there was a difference. Hayward Collegiate received an additional 4,500 minutes of education per that calendar year. Mm-hmm. That's a difference of 16 full days of school. Hayward Collegiate received 16 more days of school than Watsonville Prep. Watsonville Prep had 58 minimum days. Hayward Collegiate received 40 minimum days. So, I mean, we had a few more days extra of school as well. I know Watsonville Prep did have some issues with flooding. They probably missed like maybe 3 days of school. But I think there's something maybe we can do to add more minutes of instructional time, or maybe look deeper into this. 16 more days of instruction that Hayward Collegiate received definitely makes a difference in education. If you're not in school, if you're not receiving the education, how is Watsonville Prep going to get better scores? So I think that's something that we need to look into. A deeper dive. So I think we talk about parents, Watsonville's parents, their education level. I think we need to look at ourselves and what can we do to give these kids education. So we need to look at ourselves a little bit and deep a little bit deeper on this issue. And if that means adjustments to next year's calendar, maybe we need to do that. But 16 more days of school, that's a big, big difference. And you could probably see it in the scores as well. I mean, you know, Hayward Collegiate jumped up quite a bit, and Watsonville, not so much. So that's just my comment.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, notwithstanding the issue of the demographics, which I'm not ready to agree with you on, I do agree vigorously with the rest of your point, particularly time. We focus, as James was saying, we focus on this amount of time in the classrooms, but if there are lesser days, it's an excellent point. Thank you. And
we will definitely include that as part of the analysis as we, you know, as the board is looking at what the budget's going to be for next year. That's the right time to be looking at this, because the calendar impacts the budget tremendously. And so in February, as the board is doing its goal setting for the coming year, lengthening the calendar or increasing the number of minutes can definitely be part of that conversation. There are some charter schools that have as many as 220 days of school, you know, versus the normal of 180. And it's just about how we use the time and how we prioritize the resources. So thank you very much.
I mean, thanks for staying on this issue too. This is the second meeting you raised it, and I hope you'll keep an eye on it.
The one thing, Jaime, I do want to just respond to that, because that the official school day ended at 3:05, but we did have hundreds of kids staying in the after-school program until 3:35. So that did extend the school day for quite a large majority of kids last year. And that typically is, you know, numbers that we wouldn't count towards normal instructional minutes. So there is that as a somewhat offset, but definitely not the same as Tier 1 instruction.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, and it'll be good to, you know, to keep on that data. I know Hayward Collegiate, their calendar changed this year. We added about another 10 more days of minimum days and a couple extra days off. So it'll be kind of, I hope Hayward HC doesn't, you know, go down in numbers, but we'll see at end of the year.
Yeah, I will just one other thing, not to sound defensive, even if I do, I'm not feeling defensive. I've just always, the education system has so little time built in for teachers to actually engage in planning and working with each other. It's a very isolating, I guess you could say, career at times. And one of the reasons we have some of those minimum days, especially the Wednesdays, is to increase that collaboration across the sites.
And I see that. I see, you know, we have it on the Wednesdays, but I just see that it just seems like we always have a minimum day on a Friday before the holiday and a Monday after the holiday. So it kind of seems like it's kind of put in there for, you know, is professional development being done on those Fridays before the holiday? So it seems like every holiday we do have a minimum day. And, you know, that also could hurt parents as well, you know, especially in Watsonville. You know, we're talking about daycare and, you know, what do we do? So that's something to take a look at as well, I think.
Yep, for sure.
Thank you, James. And James, can you make sure that, as Chuck was saying, going back and focusing on these points, that the information criteria that you present, you know, the triangle and others, that you sort of keep that constant, come back to that and say, this is where we were last meeting, this is where we are now, that would be very helpful, the commonality of data. So thanks. It was a great report, and we appreciate the highlights.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Okay, moving on. We'll move to section 4, closed session. The closed session is covering tonight. We'll have a confidential student matter regarding the education section 35146. Do I hear a motion to enter closed session?
JP, so moved.
Awesome. JP will move. Claire will second. Thank you. Would you call the roll?
Alfred Borkang?
Aye.
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
Emmett Kuroda?
Aye.
Jim Flaherty?
Aye.
Sarah Hegde?
Aye.
Sarah Grissom?
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Thank you. We'll take a few minutes and Chuck, could you set up closed session. And again, for those who staff members that are signing off, thank you very much for attending and contributions to the information. Having gone into the board would the chair reports that in returning to open session, the board had gone into a closed session to discuss a confidential student matter. The board unanimously approved a settlement agreement and a confidential student matter, OHH case number 20230804. And Sean, you'll be able to get that language specifically from Tom for the minutes. Any additional items the board members would like to cover before we move to adjourn? Again, Noel, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Claire. I'll motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Claire. Second.
This is JP. If you can hear me, I second.
Okay. Thank you. Sean, would you call the roll, please?
Alfred Morricane.
Aye.
Chuck Daggs.
Aye.
Jake Anderson.
Aye.
Bobby Kuroga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shara Hegde.
Aye.
Sarah Grissom.
Aye.
The motion to adjourn is approved.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for your comments and reports. I think it was a terrific board meeting. Thank you for your time, for making the time, and for your service on the board. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Meeting adjourned.